Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with Donald Trump's recent discovery that dropping bombs and threatening war distracts the public and the press from the inquiries into collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians, and the many questions yet to be answered about Trump and his team's financial ties to oligarchs close to Putin. Scott Horton, a professor at Columbia Law School and a contributing editor at Harper's in Legal Affairs and National Security, joins us to analyze the latest explosive revelations from the former British MP Louise Mensch, who claims intelligence sources say that Carter Page went to Moscow with a videotape of Donald Trump offering Putin a change in U.S. policy to Russia in exchange for his help in hacking our election. We will investigate this and other claims that General Flynn was compromised by the Russians and coordinated with Putin to have fake news created by the Russian state fed into the campaign to hurt Hillary Clinton and help Trump. Then we'll get a further analysis of the narrow victory in Sunday's referendum in Turkey, with European election monitors questioning the legitimacy of the results, while the winner, Turkey's new dictator for life, President Erdogan, admonishes them imperiously with "Know your place." Nicholas Danforth, a senior policy analyst for the National Security Program at the Bipartisan Policy Center, joins us to discuss his new report from the Bipartisan Policy Center, "Dark Cloud of Illegitimacy Hovers Over Turkey Vote," and Trump's call congratulating Erdogan, which undercuts the European case against Erdogan. Then finally, we will examine alternatives to the collision course the U.S. is on with North Korea as its regime warns that thermonuclear war could break out at any minute. Adam Mount, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, who was the project director at the Council on Foreign Relations Independent Task Force, chaired by former chairman of the Joint Chiefs Admiral Mullen and former U.S. Senator Sam Nunn, joins us to discuss their new report, "A Sharper Choice on North Korea, Engaging China for a Stable Northeast Asia." And joining us now is Scott Horton, who's a professor at Columbia Law School and a contributing editor at Harper's in Legal Affairs and National Security. He served as counsel to Andrei Sakharov and Elena Bonner, among other activists in the former Soviet Union, and serves on the American branch of the International Law Association and has represented a variety of journalists and whistleblowers. Welcome to Background Briefing, Scott Horton.
Great to be back with you, Ian.
Well, thank you, Scott. And I'm getting back to you because I wanted to – I'd like to be able to talk to Louise Mensch, but she's laying low and not doing interviews. But she's still putting out some pretty provocative stuff on her blog. But let's just do some context here. Clearly, the Russian Trump story is not going away in spite of the fact that Donald Trump has very, I think, skillfully managed to get it off the headlines – sending cruise missiles into Syria, certainly took it off the headlines. Dropping a big bomb in Afghanistan took it off the headlines. And tensions over North Korea, which are continuing, will keep it off the headlines. But that doesn't mean it's going away. And of course, we all have to add to that that after James Comey and Mike Rogers had the first public hearing of the House Intelligence Committee, that was devastating to the White House, and clearly Trump freaked out, and they managed to get Devin Nunes to basically blow up the entire House Intelligence Committee and make it dysfunctional just ahead of a appearance by the acting Attorney General Sally Yates, former head of the CIA Brennan, and the former DNI General Clapper. So let's look at that first. Do you think that the Trump people have basically sidetracked the Russian investigation, or is it sort of still percolating there on the back burner?
Well, I think they effectively sidetracked the House version at some cost. So I think there was a response to that, which I believe was orchestrated by General McMaster, who was furious about the fact that his staffers were used in this effort with Devin Nunes to shut down the committee. And from what I understand, he insisted that a number of people be fired or removed, and that's included Steve Bannon and KT McFarlane and three more junior people. I think all that happened, and Devin Nunes was removed from management of the Russia investigation. So I think it happened at some cost. On the other hand, the Senate investigation went forward, and, you know, there we had a very important hearing at which the Republicans actually asked some of the toughest and most difficult questions. And in the meantime, last week, while there was distraction, I think most attention focused on Korea, Syria, and Afghanistan during the last 2 weeks. Nevertheless, there appears to have been further breakthroughs achieved in the investigation, and we have The Guardian and several other British papers reporting that the investigation has produced substantive, corroborated evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russian intelligence. So that's quite important. And they also disclosed, I guess, in the last week, quite a bit of detailed information about how the whole counterintelligence investigation got started, with it being clear that it got started on an initiative that came from the UK and from European allies, not from inside the United States. So all those interesting things. So slowed down, not derailed.
Well, but you do get the impression that even the Senate inquiry is moving at glacial speed. So I'm just wondering whether the Trump people are just slow walking this thing to death. But nevertheless, I wanted to talk to you about some of the extraordinary stuff that Louise Mensch is publishing. And my understanding is that one of her sources has been the former head of GCHQ, Robert Hennigan, who was recently fired. And my understanding is that the Trump people leaned on Theresa May to get him fired. I don't know whether that's true or not. He denies it, of course. But what's your sense of her sources? Because we'll get to what she's reporting, but what she's reporting is pretty explosive.
Well, the Hennigan bit and why he came to be removed on Inauguration Day of Donald Trump, that's a fascinating story we haven't heard the end of. And, you know, the rumors that he was fired to try to appease Trump have swirled around for some time. Of course, he very vigorously contests that, saying that he left at his own request because of needs of family. But that's, I don't know, that's a sort of a very conventional response. But coming to Louise Mensch, she's a difficult case, isn't she? I mean, you know, she's come up with some of the most explosive and validated the disclosures in this investigation so far. No doubt about that. No doubt that she has very good connections with the intelligence community, both in the UK and the US. But on the other hand, she's also a conspiracy theorist, and she's put out some, and so she has released nuggets of very good new information, and this winds up being commingled with speculation. Some of the speculation's well-informed. Some of it's not well-informed. Some of it's contradictory. Some of it is just plain and obviously wrong. So, you know, she's a frustrating source to deal with. I have to say I rather wish that Louise Mensch would write less and would be more careful about what she wrote.
Well, let's talk about what she's just put out on April the 16th. Carter Page went to Moscow with a tape of Donald Trump offering treason for hacking. And that's pretty extraordinary. That's the charge, that Carter Page literally went to Moscow with a pre-recorded tape of Donald Trump offering to change American policy if he were to be elected, to make it more favorable to Putin. In exchange, Page was authorized directly by Trump to request the help of the Russian government in hacking the election. So that would be the smoking gun of all smoking guns, right? That videotape.
That would be absolutely explosive. And, you know, let's back up here and say, you know, what's happened in the last 3 weeks? There have been a series of disclosures about Carter Page specifically. And those disclosures have completely demolished both his statements about what he did in Russia in July of 2016 and the explanations that came from the Trump campaign about what he did. So the claims that he was there on personal business, that's destroyed. I mean, it was discovered, of course, that the Trump campaign approved his going there and that they paid for parts of his visit. His claim was originally that he went there just to give a talk at commencement at a school. There was nothing beyond that. He had no meetings with Russian political figures. He certainly never discussed any concessions Trump may have made. And now, under very aggressive and hostile questioning, in which he's been presented with evidence to the contrary, he's backed away from those claims. So I think that lays the opening for exactly this sort of disclosure. I mean, what was he doing there? Now, by way of background, of course, Christopher Steele states in one of his most explosive memoranda that he had a meeting with Yegor Sechin, who was the head of Rosneft, and there was a discussion about getting Trump a slice of the Rosneft offering of 19.5% equity, which ultimately went to Glencore and the Qatari Investment Fund. He's denied that, and he continues to deny that. But we're now dealing with a situation in which his denials are not credible. And there seems to be a very clear focus by the Intelligence Committee on him. And indeed, we also know he was the unidentified male one in a Russian espionage prosecution in Manhattan. And he has admitted that he had, as was alleged in that case, he had numerous meetings with Russian espionage agents and provided them with materials. And as the surveillance recordings filed in that case show, he was viewed by them as an intelligence asset. So all this looks really terrible for Carter Page and for the Trump camp having used them. And it makes the claims that Louise Mensch has put forward, which I think a year ago would have been viewed as completely absurd, now it makes them look like something that just can't be dismissed quickly.
And again, I'm speaking with Scott Horton, who's a professor at Columbia Law School and is a contributing editor at Harper's in Legal Affairs and National Security. He serves on the American branch of the International Law Association and has represented a variety of journalists and whistleblowers. The other piece of information, data dumping, that's come out from Louise Mensch on April 16th, Mike Flynn treason tour, global Russian propaganda coordinated with Trump. And this makes the case that, according to her sources and within the intelligence community, Michael Flynn was coordinating with and for Russian agents the drafting of messages that Vladimir Putin was using to attack democracy, not only in the United States, but across Europe. And she gets further into details that involve Cambridge Analytica and how much they were able to disseminate fake news. But it takes it even further, and that is that this fake news that helped elect Trump here in the United States was actually created by Russian-directed propaganda, and the targeting of voters with extraordinary precision was done through Cambridge Analytica, which, of course, Steve Bannon sits on the board, and it's owned by Robert Mercer, the biggest donor to the Trump campaign. And then on top of that, of course, Sir Richard Dealove, the former head of MI6, has told the Financial Times, first of all, that there's incontrovertible evidence to suggest that the Russians were involved in hacking the elections on Trump's behalf. But he also apparently, Dealove, left a dining club at Cambridge because he thought there was too much influence from Dmitry Firtash, who's this corrupt oligarch who is Paul Manafort's patron. He apparently donated $6 million to Cambridge. And also, Michael Flynn had spent some time there at Cambridge University, and where he's consorting with a young woman who looks as though she was an FSB honey trap. So let's start with the general premise that she's putting forth here, that a lot of the fake news that Trump used was actually manufactured in Russia in coordination with the Trump campaign.
I think there seems to be little doubt that that's correct, but it seems that most of the bots that were deployed for this purpose are in Macedonia, Montenegro, Bulgaria, and the Balkans, rather than in Russia per se. But it does seem to be an operation that was funded, set up, and run by the Russians. So that's correct. Now, what strikes me is a little, and it's also very clear that Flynn did go on the sort of tour she describes, and that he was interacting with a number of other figures with what they call ethno-nationalist right groups, who were being supported by the Kremlin. So that's correct. What strikes me as a little bit more doubtful in all of this is the suggestion that he would have played a key role in political messaging. That just doesn't strike me as correct, because I don't think he has the correct background or sensitivities for that sort of work.
So what's the story then with how much he was compromised and perhaps got into a honey trap with this young Russian lady at Cambridge University?
I predict we're going to hear a lot more about that in the next couple of weeks. You read the story. So we've had, I think, a very important story in the Financial Times that you referred to. A story in the Financial Times, in fact, that ran back in December of last year about a Russian infiltration of that Cambridge discussion group. And I think that focused in part on the same woman named Svetlana, who had a liaison with Flynn. I think this was also something that British intelligence was involved reporting to their American counterparts. Mm-hmm. So that I think there's quite a bit there. And it does seem that their relationship is shall we say, if you look at some of the emails that get quoted in some of these discussions, seems to have been a rather intimate relationship.
Between General Misha and
exactly.
Svetlana.
And Svetlana, who was involved in a number of other scandalous events, and who had an incredibly detailed knowledge of Russian espionage history with access to all sorts of highly confidential information, and parlayed that into doing a thesis at Cambridge in intelligence history. It's very, very suspicious. But I would say let's come back and focus on what does it mean for Flynn. I mean, Flynn was at that time the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency. American officers, senior officers who occupy positions like that have certain duties, and they include reporting liaisons or relationships when they occur overseas, and particularly with individuals like Svetlana. You just simply have to say you had these meetings, you had these dealings, and so forth. He did not report any of this, so you've got pretty clear violations by him that would fuel suspicions about his relationship with and dealing with Russian intelligence. And of course, that's all right in the middle of this whole inquiry.
Well, just in the last minute, Scott Horton, this stuff is pretty explosive, and even if it's only a percentage of it, it's true, it ought to be enough to push this inquiry forward. So can the government, by distraction and by stunt, which is Trump's MO, when are the people going to see through it? When is the media going to stop, being jerked by the chain here and start focusing on the big ticking clock here, which is the collusion between Trump and the Russians?
Well, that is the big question right now. And I think we've gotten, and I think, all these things coming up right now, one of the questions you've got to ask is, why wasn't this developed during the election campaign?
Yeah.
These are all things that could easily have been investigated, explored, and written about during the campaign period. And instead, all the investigation seems to have started only after the election was over.
Right.
So that's a big problem. I think we're seeing, we're seeing gradual, steady movement in the polls with people more and more suspicious about what's going on. His approval numbers are historically low. The number of people demanding that there be a formal independent investigation is two-thirds of the public. The number of people suggesting he should be impeached is already approaching about 40%, and he's a person who hasn't yet served 100 days as president. That's all pretty extraordinary.
Well, Scott Horton, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
My great pleasure.
Thank you. And again, I've been speaking with Scott Horton, who's a professor at Columbia Law School and a contributing editor at Harper's in Legal Affairs and National Security. He serves on the American branch of the International Law Association and has represented a variety of journalists and whistleblowers. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back looking into the European election monitors questioning the legitimacy of the Turkish referendum, while the winner, Turkey's new dictator for life, tells them, know your place.